Hello, and welcome to the Healthy Balanced Birth and Beyond podcast. I'm Olivia, your host, and on this podcast, we will talk about everything related to the journey to conceive, pregnancy, labor, birth, postpartum, parenthood, and beyond. This is a safe space where birth professionals, birthing people, expectant parents, and partners can come on and share their knowledge or personal experiences with our listeners. The goal of this podcast is to create connections, share stories, information, and resources to educate and empower people in their own personal journey. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Healthy Balanced Birth and Beyond podcast. This week, I have an incredible guest who actually reached out to me after finding out about my podcast, and she wanted to share a story with us. So today we have Jasmine with us. And Jasmine, would you like to tell us a little bit about you and your story?
Yes, I'd love to. First, I'll give you a little bit about my background. I live in New York City. I grew up in New York as well. And as a profession, I'm a lighting artist on computer animated films. So films like Ice Age and Rio and Ferdinand and Peanuts and most recently Spies in Disguise. If you've seen those, then those are the movies I've worked on in my
career. So cool.
Yeah. And I'm here to tell you about my fertility story and in how, you know, I went through it and how it can help you, not only if you're struggling with infertility, but in life in general.
Yeah, so. One of the things that I've heard from people who've listened to, I had one episode with one of my friends who also struggled with fertility and infertility. And people reached out to me after the episode and reached out to her just saying that it was like, it made them feel like they weren't alone. It made them feel like there are other people who have gone through this. And it was nice to hear stories where it was a struggle and it was very difficult for them to go through, but they did end up being able to have children and that sort of thing. So I have a feeling that your story will do the exact same thing. And it seems like you've taken it and you've made it into something positive. You know, you've taken the hard things that you've gone through and turned it into something that can not only help you, but help other people as well.
Yes, definitely. I mean, I went through the same thing. The way when I shared it, a very similar thing, not only is it therapeutic for the person sharing it, but for those listening, realizing that they're not alone. And when, honestly, I didn't realize it would make such a big impact when I first shared my story, but kind of what you mentioned, like people will come out and say, you know, I went through similar things or that really helped me. And that really encouraged me to speak out more about it. And also what we'll speak about too is how I approached it. And it's very different from what I've been hearing. And that's why I'm also very passionate about sharing my story. And the way I approached it is it's different. And we'll get to that. But that's what I also want to share. So people can also use this in their own journey and in their life moving forward.
Yeah.
I know I'm like alluding to this like big thing.
I'm glad you are because you're essentially letting people know what we're going to be chatting about today. So it's awesome. So do you want to share your own story with us today?
Yeah, I'd love to. So as I mentioned, growing up, I grew up in New York. I had a very good childhood and I have no complaints. I was basically told, you know, or taught what the perfect life should be. You know, you study hard, you go to a good school, you have a good career, you meet someone, you have, you know, 2.5 kids, you work really hard, you retire at 65. You know, I was definitely like, that was like in my mind the whole time, like, okay, these are the things that I should be doing. And, you know, not that I didn't want to do them, but I definitely like fed into that. So I was going along the path and I, you know, obstacles came, but nothing too huge. So, you know, I went to a good school, had a good career, got married. And then I think back to it and how naive I was that like, I'm like, yeah, so I had it all planned out. I'm going to start trying when I'm 30. By 35, I'll have 3 kids. No problem. So I did exactly that. I got married around 28. We started trying at 30. And then I still remember like that after the first month of trying, I was like, wow, I'm not pregnant. That's crazy. And, you know, 3 months went by, 6 months, 9 months, and, you know, you start getting worried. And after almost a year, and I went to a doctor about it because, you know, that's what they say, like, right. Try for a year naturally. And we went to the doctor and we got all the tests, the infertility kind of related tests to mm-hmm. just make sure everything's working right on both of our sides. And nothing came up. Everything came up normal. They said, you know, there's nothing, which is good and bad because it's like frustrating because, mm-hmm. you know, at that point they diagnose you with unexplained infertility because mm-hmm. it's still something's up because they're like, you've been trying for a year or something, you know, but they can't pinpoint anything. So they had unexplained infertility. And at that point they're like, let's try you on some procedures. So I started with IUI. Mm-hmm. Which for those that are not familiar, it's basically like the medical version of like the turkey baster thing, you know, like people joke about it in like the movies. I mean, that's the easiest way to explain it. So it's less invasive. And we did about, you know, 4 IUIs, I want to say, at this one clinic, and nothing took. And by this point, you know, a couple of years, like it goes by really quickly, especially the different cycles, you know, you have to wait in between. So it's not just like one after the other. And at this point, probably, you know, another year went by, maybe a year and a half, and still nothing. And during this time, you know, I'm very much like a controlling person that I like to control my outcome. So I'm like Googling different things too on the side, trying to figure out what I can do to, you know, get pregnant. So I'm trying all these different things from like dabbling in acupuncture and everything as mm-hmm. well. And, you know, it's really frustrating because there's no definitive answer on like how to get pregnant. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is in that regard, but when it comes to infertility, there's no, like, I always would say, you know, if you're trying to lose weight, it's like, okay, if you exercise and you eat a certain thing, it's almost guaranteed that you'll see results. Right. But with infertility, it's like, you don't have that guarantee. You can do everything and it could work for someone, but it might not work for another person. So it's just a really emotionally draining as well.
Yeah. I mean, especially with, when it's unexplained infertility, that doesn't mm-hmm. give you any sort of direction to go in because it's basically saying you clearly have something going on, but we don't know what it is. So now at that point, I mean, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but you're just sitting there and you're like, okay, well, what do I try next? And exactly. There are so many different things that people suggest for you to try and X, Y, and Z. And then when you have conversations with people who have not gone through it, they're like, oh, well, have you tried this? Have you tried this? Mm-hmm. Have you tried this? And you're like, believe me, I've tried everything. I've exactly. heard so many different people share that with me. And I can't imagine how frustrating that must be, especially when there are so many emotions going into it. Because like you said, in your head, you had this vision of what your life was going to be. And then you're trying to figure out how to make that happen. Mm-hmm. And I'm a lot like you in terms of wanting to control the outcome and wanting to control things. So I can understand that. I'm so sorry that it was something that you had to deal with and it was so emotional and hard.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. I would never wish it on anyone. I will say towards the end, like now it's easy to say, but in hindsight, I really appreciate mm-hmm. the journey and I'll explain why I would say that, but yeah. I appreciate the journey because, to be honest, I wouldn't be as good of a person and a mom if I like can honestly say if at 30 I got pregnant and I had 3 kids by 35, I probably I would be a different person, a very different person. I wouldn't appreciate my family mm-hmm. enough, I think, and my kids especially. And I would just be still like on that path of like, okay, now I did that, check. Yeah. I'm going to just now start working hard. And what fertility allowed me to do was stop mm-hmm. and actually like reflect on, wait, why am I doing this? And what is really important to me. You know, I was just kind of going along blindly. And that I feel like COVID actually has forced a lot of people to do that too, to like stop and pause, because we're all quarantined and we're stopped from our everyday lives. And now we're like forced to kind of step back and be like, wait, why, like this job that I'm doing or something, like, what do I really want to do? But I totally deviated.
No. That's a completely valid point. I think that you're right, that it has made a lot of people question what we're doing and what's most important in our lives.
Yeah. So I think this like fertility journeys and obstacles like this is also very similar in that, where it forces you to stop and think, and it's all about the journey and what you learn in it. And that's why I'll say now, and even like towards the, like, I appreciate the journey and like, I'm really grateful for who it's made me become. So that being said, I'll go back. So I did a couple of IUIs and it wasn't working. And as you said, it's emotionally draining. You're trying things, you don't know, you're just kind of like blindly trying things, since we didn't have, it's unexplained infertility. And that's when the doctor was like, maybe you should go to IVF. And IVF is something most people are probably more familiar about. It's in vitro fertilization, where they actually extract, retrieve the eggs out of your body. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's different ways, but they'll like inject the sperm into it, fertilize it, and then put the embryos back in. Mm-hmm. So we're like, okay. And at that point, we were like, okay, let's do it. Because I was just tired. It was probably like three or four years into the journey at that point. And I was like, oh, let's just get it done. You know, like in my mind, I was like, okay, if we do IVF, that's going to work. And at that point, we did change clinics, because that's when my first inkling was like, not all clinics are the same, especially when it comes to IVF, because the labs like really matter. Not only the doctor, but the labs that actually, like, you know, because they're actually taking out your eggs, like fertilizing it in these laboratories. So we went to a bigger institution for that. And I still remember meeting with that doctor, the head doctor there. And he was like, at that point, I was probably 33 or 34. And he was like, yeah, no problem. Like, he's looking at my charts. He's like, you should be fine getting pregnant. You know, I don't see anything wrong. Cause like they said, all the tests came out, you know, completely normal.
Right.
So we started again on IUIs, because they wanted to see how IUIs went in their clinic. And also as an insurance reason,
okay,
they wanted to get some IUIs in. Again, the IUIs didn't stick. And then finally we got,
Sorry, just listening to you talk about the IUIs, how many IUIs did you end up undergoing?
I did a lot. I mean, I probably did like six or seven, which is a lot. Most people probably wouldn't do that many. I feel like most people probably do like three at most, or four.
Okay.
I think part of the reason why we did it for the second clinic was because of insurance reasons.
Okay.
They needed to see you did so many cycles of IUIs before
there.
Before they'd even pay for an IVF, or partially pay for an IVF cycle.
That's so crazy.
I know. Then, I mean, money and insurance is a totally...
Yeah, it's another topic we can talk about another time.
So we finally got to the stage where we did IVF, and I was so excited. I was like, okay, this is it, right? And we did all of, you know, it's a lot of meds, it's a lot of needles, lots of appointments. And, you know, they retrieve the eggs, which is a surgical procedure. You go under. And I had probably at that point, like maybe 8 or 10 eggs retrieved. I was never a huge egg producer, or whatever you call it. Like some people, I hear some stories, people like retrieve like 25. And I'm like, what? That's crazy. Maybe like a couple, like six fertilized. So what they do is they call you, right? Like they'll like say, you know, the next day, you know, four are looking good. So they made an appointment for a 5-day transfer where they transfer the embryos back in. And on that fifth day, I was like so excited, you know, I was like, oh, finally, you know, it's happening. And we were at the door and my phone rang and it was a nurse from the clinic. And she said, don't come in. And I remember thinking like, what do you mean don't come in? I'm coming in for my transfer. And she's like, yeah, we checked on your embryos this morning and they didn't look good. None of them are going to be able to transfer. I didn't even realize that was it because my first IVF, I didn't even realize that was a possibility.
So none of them were viable, they were saying?
Yeah, none of them were viable. None of them made it to day 5 blastocyst.
Yeah.
And they had checked it around day 3 mm-hmm. and it looked fine. So I was devastated. I was like, I never knew that was possible. So in my mind, it was like I went through everything, all the meds, the surgery, and it felt like I was on a sports team and I had gone through like all the practices and I worked so hard, but then the big game came and I like sat on the sidelines. Like I need my shot to go into the big game.
I mean, that's a very good metaphor for it. Yeah. You're doing all this work and then all of a sudden they're like, nope, can't do that.
Yeah. It was like, I didn't even get a chance. And it was really hard. And that was the first IVF. And we went into the doctor's office the next day to discuss it. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, yeah, the eggs, the embryos did not grow enough by day 5. And then this is when she had a new diagnosis for me. She said, I think the problem is your egg quality.
Okay.
Is not good. And of course, my controlling personality said, my very next question was like, how do you improve egg quality? And she responded, you can't improve egg quality. And I pushed her a little bit more. I was like, how could that be possible? I can't improve egg quality. And then she mentioned like acupuncture mm-hmm. has been known to possibly improve it. So, you know, like if she had told me that like standing on my head for 5 minutes a day would help it, I would have done that. Like anything, you know, at this point, you know, I would have done anything. And so the next day I was like, okay, let's do that. And she was like, we'll do another cycle. Maybe adjust some of the meds, but I was like, I'm going to go to acupuncture. So I met with this, it was a fertility acupuncturist. Mm-hmm. specialist, and she was amazing. And I met with her the very next day because I'm very impatient. So I made my point. I'm like, okay, it's gotta happen now. And she looked in my chart. She's like, okay. And she was also a little. She's like, I don't see. Yeah, there's nothing. Like the egg quality is one thing, but other than that, everything seems okay. But let's detox your body.
Okay.
So we actually went on like a 3-month thing where I totally detoxed. I went on a pretty strict diet of, you know, no dairy, no sugars, no caffeines, mm-hmm. all that kind of thing, all those things. And also did acupuncture once a week to kind of prep my body. So I did that for 3 months and I was ready for my second IVF cycle. I was like, okay, I did this. I worked even harder this time to prep, you know, and everything was pretty much the same with, you know, the amount of eggs and the retrieval. And it came to the, you know, I had the appointment for my day 5 transfers exactly the same. And of course I was really nervous because, you know, what happened previously. And this time I was actually in the acupuncturist office that morning because I was doing acupuncture before the transfer.
Okay.
Some people sometimes do, to kind of prep your body. And I still remember the acupuncturist coming in after my morning treatment, and she had this look on her face, and I knew. I was like, and she's like, I'm sorry, the clinic called and it's a no-go. And it was the same exact thing. You know, they checked on embryos and none of them made it through day 5.
So it's the same exact situation, like they made it to day 3, but they didn't make it to day 5, is that okay?
Exactly, yeah. So like what they do is they'll like check on it a little bit during the time, they see it's okay, then they make the appointment for you. And yeah, it was you know, this is the second time this the same exact thing happened. I put in so much, you know, energy this time around. I even took 3 months off in between. And it was devastating. It was, I mean, it was beyond devastating. And I still remember walking across the park with my husband after that, that morning. And we were talking about, you know, our next steps. And I actually told him, you know, if this doesn't work out, I want you to go. Because it was at that point, you know, it's on me. It was my eggs that were, you know, stopped the barrier from us having kids. And you know when you meet someone and they're like meant to be a father, like, yeah. He was that guy, like way more paternal than I was, you know, like he's like, oh, he's gonna be an amazing dad someday. And we met when we were really young too. We met in college, so we met when like we were 19 and 18, but I like even then I knew. So I was being completely honest. I was like, I can't be the person that doesn't allow you to be a father. It was so hard. I mean, it was like, even now I tear up.
I'm tearing up, so I can't imagine.
I mean, and this is like where all, you know, guilt comes into play, like so many emotions and, you know, so many things go into these journeys, especially when it is a factor of like, you know, no longer is it unexplained infertility, it's, you know, poor egg quality, and that's me. Of course, I mean, he's amazing. Of course he said no. He said that. He's like, we're going to figure this out. And you know, we had a good talk about it. We definitely became closer during this journey. Just, you know, you have to become really real with your emotions and, you know, your relationship. And the next day I was ready for the doctor's appointment. And this is where also fertility, it's all these like cycles of, you know, you have to get your hopes, you have to like pump yourself up, right? You have to always try to be optimistic, ready for that next step. But then you get like completely deflated and devastated. So it's like these flows of like devastation to like the next day. I'm like, okay, I'm ready for the next step. And like,
it's like a roller coaster of emotions.
Yeah. And it feels never ending. It's just exhausting. And the next day I went into the doctor's office expecting a plan, like expecting like, okay, so twice this happened, what's the next plan? You know, what's the next step? And this is, she did have a next step for me, but it wasn't the one I expected. But she just started instantly talking to me about egg donors or adoption. She's just like, you know, I think she's like, and I like paused. I was like, wait, you can't, like, we're not going to try again with my own eggs. And she's like, no, she's like, I don't, we can't try again with your own eggs. And
wait, I kept pushing. Did she say, yeah, we can't try with your eggs again?
Well, she said she wouldn't, okay, do a cycle. I mean, she was essentially saying she wouldn't do another cycle with my own eggs.
But that's not her choice.
I know. Well, it's, she could get, I mean, they, this, yeah. I mean, this clinic was like, I think she said, I don't recommend it. And then when I pushed her on, you know, like, is there really no chance that it could work with my own eggs? And then she said, she gave me a less than 1% chance. And I was like, what, less than 1%? And keep in mind, at this point, I was 35 years old. And so instead of, you know, at 35, my plan was to have 3 kids. Mm. Instead, I'm sitting here in this office at 35 years old with a doctor telling me I have less than 1% chance of having any kids. 5 years, we've been trying for 5 years. And it's, you know, that's basically telling you to give up. I mean, less than 1%. It was, yeah, that was definitely the lowest point in the journey. And yeah, she basically said that like that clinic specifically, they wouldn't do another IVF cycle with me with my own eggs. And that's why she said like I should start looking into egg donors. And I kind of left that meeting a little numb, more than a little numb. The less than 1% kept ringing in my ear. And but at the same time, I was like, no, it can't be. Like, I'm 35, I'm healthy, I don't feel like this is the end. This, like, I still remember we left that appointment and we both went to work, which is crazy, right? Because it was in the morning and we're like, okay. And we like kissed each other goodbye and we like went our separate ways to work. And on the way to work, I still remember on the train ride, I like cried the whole train ride. And by the time I got to work, I was kind of, I was still really sad, I was still really upset. But I was kind of more, not defiant, but I was like, no, this can't be it, right? This can't be it. I'm not gonna give up, essentially, which would have been so easy to give up. I mean, imagine like after 5 years of trying and then just being exhausted emotionally, and then a doctor telling you that you have less than 1% chance. It would have been so easy to just like throw, like say, okay,
Just throw your hands up, throw the towel
yeah,
in.
exactly. And that's when, I will say it's definitely like the lowest point in my journey, but then it became like my aha moment too, because it was that point where I was like at work and I work in a creative field, and I realized I was like looking back at my 5 years and all the frustration of trying. I was like, what is wrong? Like I was like analyzing it. I start to analyze. I'm like, what am I not doing? And I realized the way I was approaching my fertility journey was like completely a different way that I approached my career, like anything in my job, like my everyday job. And what I mean is, in my job, I'm an artist, so I definitely use like this artist mindset where when I get an obstacle or a problem, I never think of it as like an impossible thing. Like there's always a solution, and you just have to find the solution for it. And there's oh, and I was just like, wait, this is the same thing. Like, how is this different from an obstacle at work or a problem at work? Like, there is a solution for this, and I'm being too pigeonholed. I'm not looking at it in the right way. I was too blindly following what everyone was saying, and I wasn't really being my own advocate, really, because I was too trusting.
That was one thing I was going to ask you about. When the doctor says you only have one, it's or less than 1% chance that you're going to get pregnant on your own and have your own children, like in our society, we're so quick to just be like, oh, yep, whatever the doctor says, like that's just how it is. But like I admire you for not giving up, for taking that and being like, no, like there's no way. Like we have to keep trying. Like it takes a lot, especially like you said, going through what you've gone through for the last 5 years and trying all these things. Like the fact that you still had the motivation to keep going is incredible.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think, yeah, this journey just makes you stronger. Like there's a term in fertility, it's like fertility warriors, like infertility warriors. And it's like, yeah, we do become warriors because what we have to go through, this constant battle. And it's just, that's the hardest thing too. It's a secret battle. Like most people aren't talking about it. I didn't talk about it actually until after. And you're silently suffering and going through this, but you have to keep this face. You have to keep this happy, like nothing's going on. Like I went into work, no one knew that I was going through that. I just had to go into work like I wasn't just told that I couldn't have kids, and pretend everything was okay. And yeah, and I think it's exactly right, like as you said, to be your best advocate, to stand up for your, because it is easy to just, especially with a professional like a doctor, to be like, oh, the doctor, and I have high respect for doc. My father's a doctor, actually. So I have like full respect for doctors, but they're only human.
Right, right? Exactly.
They're just like us. And this is where I decided to be like, okay, so this doctor says this. Let's get other perspectives. Let's get other feedback, not only for doctors, but like from, let's say, my acupuncturist who comes from more like an Eastern medicine type of perspective.
Right.
And I had an appointment with her the next day. And this is where I kind of stepped back. I was like, okay, I'm going to try to step back. I'm going to think of this as this obstacle, this problem, similar to what I do at work.
Mm-hmm.
And let's figure out solutions, not only one solution, but like multiple solutions, and test it out. And this is my aha moment. This is how I started approaching it with the artist mindset in a different way than I had been, like kind of blindly just like, go to this doctor told me this, okay, I'm gonna do this. And, you know, without questioning anything or without taking time to like really figure out if that was the right step for me.
Okay.
So the next day I went, like, again, you go in these like ebbs and flows. So I was like completely devastated. I was like, okay, there has to be another solution. So the next day I went to the fertility acupuncturist and like talked to her about it. And she was like, okay. And we spoke about it. She's like, you know, I think she didn't agree with the less than 1% chance. She thought that was, you know, really low.
Yeah.
And she also was interested in the fact that, you know, she pointed out that they were only trying to do day 5 transfers.
Right.
And they didn't try. That's the other thing that was crazy when I look back. They didn't try that many things. They tried the same protocol twice.
Right.
With like no iterations. They didn't test out like, well, this one didn't work, maybe we'll try this. They just tried the same things twice and then was like, oh, that didn't work. It's not going to work, you know? That's when she's just like, you know, maybe that clinic's not right for you. There's another clinic that I think might be a better fit. Maybe we should try that. And I was like, yes, let's try that. And I went to another doctor to get his feedback on another clinic. And he looked at my labs and everything. He's like, you know, I think he didn't agree with the less than 1% chance. And this is where it was great, because it's like, he's like, okay, so the day 5 is not working for you. Mm-hmm. I want to try a day 3 transfer.
Yeah.
Because they were still good at day 3. And this is exactly what, like, I would do at work as an artist, too. It's like, okay, that's not working. Let's adjust it slightly, because that wasn't working, but that could work. And so we tried that, and that was my third IVF cycle.
Okay.
And I got pregnant. We did a day 3.
Yay!
And it was crazy. And I still remember, and this was only like a couple months after that appointment, that I was sitting there and that doctor told me I had less than 1%. And I was like, how is it possible that just like a couple months later, I'm pregnant?
Yeah.
And I could have so easily, like we just spoke about, like, just given up. And just, I could have been like in the trenches of like looking at egg donors and adoption, and that also, that would last like years.
Right.
And that was just, so I got pregnant. I still couldn't believe I was pregnant, you know, at this point.
That's so amazing.
I still remember when the doctor called me up with the results and he told me I was pregnant, and it was so surreal. I was at work and I said to him, and I was like, are you kidding? Are you being serious? And he was like, and then he started laughing. He's like, I would be a horrible doctor if I just like joked about that. I was like, yeah,
you're right.
and we had our baby girl. She's not so much a baby anymore. She's 4.
Do you mind if I ask how your pregnancy was? Like, was your pregnancy healthy and you felt great? And
yeah, my pregnancy was good. Yeah, it was healthy. Of course, we were nervous, you know, like it took us so long, but it was great. I know some people don't love being pregnant, but I absolutely love being pregnant, especially after all the fertility. I still remember, you know, fertility treatments take so much time and energy. Like, you have to go in every day, you get shots and all this stuff, like, constantly. And I still remember, right, when I, like, saw what I needed to do for, you know, the normal OBGYN, like, how many times I had to go in and what I needed to do. And I turned to my husband. I was like, is this what everyone just does? I mean, I was like, is this what a normal person just gets to do? Because this is so easy.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my God. So, yeah, I love being pregnant. I still, like, find myself, like, touching my belly because I just used to love, like, rubbing my big belly. And, yeah, I was lucky I didn't get any morning sickness. I stayed pretty active throughout my first pregnancy. Yeah, I was just so grateful.
Yeah.
To be pregnant.
I mean, even in before you and I started talking, like, we were exchanging emails, and I didn't know about, like, the extent of your journey in terms of, like, a doctor saying this and then only trying one thing and then another doctor says, well, let's try this instead. Like you said, if you hadn't taken the initiative to be like, hey, no, like, I want to try something else instead of just trying the same thing that's clearly not working, you could have gone through all these other things that would have taken even more time. Like, it's incredible. Like, oh my God, I admire you so much for just continuing to be like, no, I want to do this. I want to try something new. I still want to try. It's amazing.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's in the moment. That's why. Yeah. When I feel like when we go through these journeys and those struggles, it just forces you to be your, like, the warrior comes out. That's exactly why they say fertility warrior. And yeah, I think it's like, if you asked me, you know, when I wasn't in that moment, I would have been like, I don't know. It's like, it's these moments that make you more courageous and gives you more strength, really. And I think that's why I said in the beginning how this journey has changed me, like, to the core.
Yeah.
Not only, you know, as, like, emotional, but, like, just giving me more strength. And
right.
I'm a strong, like, I feel more empowered. I mean, I know that's such a used word, but, you know, because I was given this, like, obstacle, told that it was not possible, and then forced to, like, be like, no, I'm gonna fight this. And I think most people, I think everyone has it in them, honestly. It's just, you know, it's also getting the right guidance, also getting the right support for it too. Because especially in this journey, you feel so alone.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was just going to ask about.
Yeah, you feel so isolated. And I felt the same way. You feel so isolated and alone. And so much of it, honestly, in the beginning, I feel like when I did it, I did depend on myself a little too much because I didn't reach out for help in many ways. But when I finally, like, the little bits of help that in my journey, when I reached out for, like, my, like, acupuncturist, let's say, I confided in her. I wish, honestly, I had confided in more people during that time. That's what I would say to people too. And this is where I think also the silent part comes in. Because so at this point, I didn't tell anyone still.
You didn't tell anybody that you were pregnant?
No, well, no, about the, no, I didn't tell anyone about my journey.
Oh,
my fertility. Like, so this is how I came out with my fertility journey, I'll say, is because I kept it very secret throughout the whole thing. I only told the immediate family because it's kind of, you know, you don't want to tell people that you're having problems or something, especially it's so personal to your own body. And what I realized is after Tegan, my daughter, was born, I posted a picture of her, you know, on social media because you just can't help yourself. And one of my friends wrote something like, oh, you have this perfect life, right? It was like to the extent like, oh, your life is so perfect. And because during those, you know, 6 years of trying, my husband and I, you know, traveled like crazy because that was our way of kind of coping with everything going on. there were times like there would be a failed cycle and I would just turn to my husband like, where are we going? Like, I need to just something to look forward to, you know?
Yeah.
And so in their mind, and then I realized in their minds of like my friends, all they saw was, you know, oh, Jasmine and Matt got married. They traveled like crazy. They were like going all over the world. And now they have this like family. And oh my God, they have this little perfect life. And I was like, I'm totally feeding into that social media, you know, perfection that, you know, I think whenever anyone going through fertility treatment or issues, when you see, you know, a new baby or like, oh, I'm a pregnancy announcement, it hits you.
Right.
And I was like, I didn't want to feed into that either. So that's when I came out. So I came out and I told my story.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually probably more terrifying than all my fertility struggles, like coming in public and like telling my story. But that's when I realized it was really therapeutic for me, because mm-hmm. I realized there was still so much trauma and emotion that I was holding in even after having the child.
Yeah.
I feel like people think, and I also think like, oh, once you have a baby, all of it goes away. You right. know, all those years of trying, but it doesn't. It's still in there. And that helped me a lot therapeutically. But then also people reaching out afterwards and saying how much it's helping them, and they didn't. And also on the flip side, people will say like, oh, I'm so sorry, because they were the ones that would say, tease me for those, you know, 5-6 years. Oh, when are you going to have a baby? When are you, you know, why aren't you pregnant? And yeah. little do they know that maybe I just probably had a failed cycle, you know, just yesterday. And they're like putting daggers in my heart by like teasing me about this, right? So like just awareness in that way helped a lot too. Like that person's like, I'm never going to ask someone about why they aren't pregnant, because you never know. Maybe they're trying, maybe they don't want kids, you know, there could be so many reasons. And then this is also when I decided to try for a second.
Okay.
Because it was right after and at this point I was not getting any younger. I was like 37.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned to my husband and I was like, should we try? And at that point, I was actually like hesitant to try, because I felt like I got like too lucky. I was like, I didn't want to, you know, I felt so grateful for being able to have one child. Mm-hmm. And I was being like, I was going to get too greedy or something, like trying for a second. But I was like, no, let's try it. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You know, we've gone through it before.
Yeah.
But this time around, I actually was like, well, what if I actually document it too, like the whole IVF process to people? So, and I still remember my husband like looking at me, he's like, but if it doesn't work, then you have to be like very, very like in camera, or, you know, very upfront and candid and say like, maybe like crying on camera that it didn't work and stuff. And I was like, well, I think people need to see that. I think people need to see what goes into it.
Right.
So I actually did. So, I mean, if you look back, I have like Facebook Live videos and posts from the start to finish of me doing a whole IVF cycle. That ultimately, it's my fourth IVF cycle, and I did get pregnant, and I have a son. Two. So I have two kids. I call them my less than 1% little miracles.
Aww.
And he just turned two. So now I have a boy and a girl.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm incredibly grateful. And that's where I am now.
And that's like, I admire you for being so open and raw and vulnerable. And like, you're doing that for yourself. Like you said, it's kind of like therapeutic. You're like, okay, this is my journey and this is what we've gone through. But not only that, like, you're choosing to document it for yourself, but you also realize that you sharing your story is going to help someone who's been in the spot that you've been in, who has felt deflated and felt like it's their fault and has felt the roller coaster of emotions like you shared. you're doing that and you're going to help other people by doing that. You could be like, people could see your story and feel encouraged to tell their own. Or like you said, people could see that and also be like, oh my gosh, I need to be mindful of the questions that I'm asking people, because you never know what goes on behind what you see on social media, like you said. So I just have nothing but admiration for you, and thank you for sharing your journey with us. It's so incredible. It really is. Like, I'm sorry that you had to go through it. But it's also pretty wonderful to hear you say that you feel like it's made you even stronger and better and brave and to tell your own story to everybody.
Yeah. I say thank you for, you know, you're doing very similar things by having this podcast and sharing. And yeah, I feel like it is something that I keep coming back to, honestly. Mm-hmm. So I did, like, I'm so passionate about this because of what I went through, but also all the things you said, like how it can help people. And I know I was so isolated and alone for those 6 years because I didn't have these resources. And when I sat back and, you know, it took me a while to process everything. And then I was like, I need to share this. Like, I need to help others that are going through this. So it, maybe it doesn't take them 6 years, you know, to learn what I had to learn. Mm-hmm. And that's why, yeah, this is like my, it's my passion. It's like, I want to give back. It's kind of my way of giving back to this community that is so strong. And, you know, they're amazing women and men. And
yeah,
in ways that they can really benefit from it.
Yeah. So do you want to share your like your four-step approach to fertility, to your fertility journey in this episode, or we're having another episode with you to share even more about your story and how you approach things. So it's totally up to you if you want to share it in this one or if you want to wait for the next one.
I guess let's wait. Should we wait for the next one? Or do you want a little snippet right now and then we can get into it?
Yeah, you could do that. You could give like a little sneak peek almost.
Yeah, I feel like I spoke a lot here. So I'll give you a little sneak peek and then we'll get into it for the next episode. So the four-step approach to taking control of your fertility journey, the way that I did it and then the way that I would like to teach you to approach it is kind of from the mind frame of an artist, mm-hmm. An artist mindset, and how they think and how they approach. And you don't have to be an artist to do this. It has nothing to do with, you know, creative, you know, anything, but it's really easy. It's really accessible. So the first step is to kind of, you know, define your version of happy. Figure out what will make you happy. And it's very unique to you. And just knowing that, knowing yourself, getting to know yourself. And then the second step is that you want to make sure that you're moving forward in the right direction. And that means that, you know, when you are faced with an obstacle or a problem, you want to make sure that you're solving the right problem. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, no matter how much energy you put into it, if it's in the wrong direction, you know, it's never going to work.
Right.
So that would be the second step, is to make sure you're solving the right problem. And then the third step is to find creative solutions. Then once you have the problem that you know you need to solve, once you know what makes you happy personally, mm-hmm. then you find creative solutions around that problem. And there's always multiple solutions. And I'm very, it might not be something that's completely clear at first, but mm-hmm. it's all about finding creative solutions. And then the last step, step four, is about taking action, right? Taking action on those. Don't overthink it. Don't try to make it perfect. You just start testing it. And then if, like, it doesn't work out, that first test, then you, like, look back, analyze it, maybe adjust it slightly, mm-hmm. and then test it again. So that way you're always moving forward.
Yeah. And I love that you are not only sharing your journey with us and sharing all the things that you've gone through, but then also you're giving people hope. You're giving people essentially like an action plan for anyone who's listening to this, who has been struggling with infertility or who has been feeling defeated. You're giving them a new way to look at it. And that is, like I said, I just have no words. I'm in awe of you. I admire you so much. And I'm so incredibly thankful that you reached out and that you're sharing your story with everybody, and that there are numerous people who are going to benefit from it, whether it's somebody who's trying to conceive or whether it's friends, family members, partners of people who are supporting somebody during that. So it's really, really incredible. And thank you so, so much for being so open and honest with us.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So we're going to come back and we're going to do a second episode where we're going to dive in a little bit deeper into talking about how to keep yourself happy during your fertility journey. And then also, again, diving a little bit more into your four-step approach and explaining that to everybody in ways that may be easy for people to understand, because you've made it pretty clear and concise for everyone so far. So do you want to leave anything with listeners today? Any last pieces of advice or words for now, as to anything that you want to share, I guess?
Anything in life? I will say that my biggest takeaway is kind of like, you know, with your fertility journey, you feel like one of the biggest things is you don't have control, right? You don't mm-hmm. have control of the outcome. There's a lot of things out of your control, but I'm going to share with you in the next episode is all about how you can control what can be controlled, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how you can actively be your own best advocate in your journey to control it, and also to control your happiness
yeah.
in your future. And I guess I'm here to tell you that it is controllable.
Yeah.
You know, it might not be exactly what you envision,
right?
But you do have control, and I just don't want you to give up.
Yeah.
It's my lasting thing that I know it's easy. I've been there. It's exhausting and be really easy to give up when you go through all this, all these things, but there's a better way. So yeah. I can't wait to share it with you.
Yay. Well, thank you, Jasmine. And thank you to everybody who tuned in to listen to this episode. We so appreciate you sitting and listening to Jasmine's story. If you have any questions for Jasmine, or if you have any questions for myself, please feel free to reach out to either one of us. I'm going to include all of Jasmine's information in the show notes. Do you mind actually just telling everybody where they can find you?
Yeah, they can find me on my site, jazzkatat, JAZZKATAT.com. I know, I'm like, I had to think about that. And there they can find actually a free fertility training.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, that you can get started.
Cool.
And, yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so, so much for listening in. And we will be back with another episode with Jasmine soon. Have a good day.
I can't wait. Thank you.